This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. Today we welcome the Hot Sardines. This is John Floridis. Welcome to Musicians Spotlight. I'm very pleased to be speaking by phone with Elizabeth Bougerol from the Hot Sardines. How are you doing, Elizabeth?
I'm doing well, John. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Great to talk with you by phone. And I forgot to ask before we started the interview where you are at the moment while we're having this conversation.
I live in Brooklyn, New York. But at the moment, I've just come up to Massachusetts on the coast, where my parents live and I have extended family here.
Okay. Well, great. Well, thank you for making time to speak with us. And I should mention right at the top, Hot Sardines, spelled just like it sounds. HotSardines.com is the name of the website for the group. And that's a great place to check in on the band and see what they're up to and the history and the music and everything that you would expect to see on such a website. Welcome Home, Bon Voyage is the most recent recording from 2019. As well, I wanted to let folks know, if they don't know this, that the Hot Sardines were in the listening area in Hamilton back in November of 2019. Since you have been to Montana fairly recently, talk a little bit about what that experience was like coming to the state, if you've toured here before, even visited here before, and what that was like performing there in Hamilton.
Not only was it the band's first time in Montana, it was the first time in Montana for most of us, certainly mine. I am not. I was born and mostly raised in France, and I'm an immigrant here to the United States. So for me, I'd always had this amazing sort of mental image of Montana, you know, cobbled together from movies and songs and books, and I was so incredibly excited because I hadn't seen that landscape before. And I have to say it was, you know, everything I hoped it would be and then some, just absolutely breathtaking.
I think your publicist sent a photo to me. Maybe she was on tour with you, you know, somewhere along the drive, you're on the highway and you had to stop because there was free range cattle area. And so there were cows.
Oh yeah, it was
crossing.
The best. I've never seen 8 people whip out their phones to record an Instagram story at the same time faster. It was great. We were all so completely tickled.
Oh, that's fantastic. And as I told her, I said, well, you know, out here it could very well have been a moose or a bear or a mountain lion or an elk or a
totally.
Bison.
Totally. Yeah, I know. It's so cool. And I mean, honestly, growing up in France, coming from there, like, we just don't have that. You know, we just don't have a road where you can drive for hours and, you know, not see another person. We don't have, you know, elk walking across the road. So it was really cool.
Elizabeth, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the origins of the band. Can you maybe talk a little bit about how the band started? I know from doing a little research that one of the things that was an interesting twist to the story was when you first got together with Evan Palazzo, you didn't really have a band in mind when you first got together with him. Is that right?
We absolutely never set out to start a band. Evan Palazzo and I met at this jazz jam that was advertised on Craigslist. It was posted on Craigslist. And he and I were both working in other fields. I was the editor of online travel guides in New York, and he was an actor, and each of us had grown up listening to early jazz, early, you know, the pop music of the early 20th century, and each of us in our own way was completely obsessed with it, and each of us wanted to hear more of it live, and each of us was really just kind of looking for one other person to mess around playing this music with as a hobby. And as we started to put together kind of little arrangements of songs, we started thinking, oh, you know, it would be cool if, you know, we could add a trumpet here, or it would be cool if we could add you know, drums on this arrangement. And it went from an open mic where Evan and I went, and we had met this tap dancer. We brought him with us to be kind of the percussion section, along with me on washboard. I'd ordered a washboard from acehardware.com, and we picked a band name that day so we would have something to write on the sign-in sheet at the open mic, and... Kind of plucked it out of nowhere, and after we played, a couple of people said, "Hey, where can I see you guys gig next?" And so, like, the next morning, I think I made a Facebook page. I was like, "Oh God, we better do something about this." And it was really very, very, very organic. And at a certain point, we kind of turned around, and we had a band.
Elizabeth Bougereau joining us here on Musicians Spotlight, speaking to us by phone, of course. Elizabeth, I also wanted to ask about the content, the music from the band. One of the things that came across in, I think it was either your website or maybe one of the other things that I read online, the concept of authenticity and irreverence. I thought it was a really cool combination.
I think, you know, by authenticity, that person might have meant that, you know, we play, and we're, for those who don't know, we're an 8-piece band usually, and we have 3 pieces of brass, piano, vocals, me singing, doing vocals, sometimes playing washboard, drums, bass, and a tap dancer who is part of the percussion section but also takes sort of dancing solos. And one of the things that was really important to Evan and I when we first started talking about playing this music was we wanted to play it as if we were just approaching these songs at any time in history. We didn't want to crawl back to 1922 and reproduce a sound that was faithful to what it might have sounded like then. We both really believe in the idea that these songs have endured in part because each artist who tackles them brings something different and new to them, in part by virtue of having a whole, you know, store of decades of music in their head. So if when we play a Louis Armstrong song, we play it with a group of musicians who've all heard James Brown and have all heard Prince and have all heard, you know, Janelle Monáe and have all heard, you know, Bix Beiderbecke. And all of those influences make up what any musician's output is made up of. So it was important to us to reinvent these songs anew the way we kind of in you know the 21st century wanted to play them. And in terms of irreverence, I think that goes hand in hand with this sort of idea of playing it playing the music as authentically us. Irreverence being the idea that these are living, breathing songs, and we didn't want to kind of dust them off as if they were museum pieces. We just wanted to approach them and go, you know, what's the emotion in this song? What does this make us feel? Like, oh, I heard a really cool song on the radio the other day. Let me play it for you. I imagine it like this. Really just trying to make it our own.
The next thing I wanted to talk to you about was, again, talking about the band and the live part of the show. How do you find a balance between putting on, by all accounts, whether I've read them online or the accounts that I've heard from the folks in the Bitterroot who saw your live performance, just an outstanding show, with making sure the music is still the focus? It seems like that's not a given that can happen. Does that make sense?
It does. And I really love that you put it that way, because that's something we really work hard at. We always approach something music first. If the music isn't good, it doesn't matter how much showmanship or how much, you know, that doesn't matter. So, but at the same time, when it started, jazz was entertainment. It only really kind of became a genre that's now sort of seen as introspective much later, sort of in the, you know, in the bebop era. Jazz was entertainment at the beginning. It was just pop music. It was popular music. It was what you got up, you dressed up to go out and dance to. And so we always wanted that to be part of what we did, is mm-hmm. that it was music first, but it was also entertainment.
doorway. Go my way, you go your way. Crazy rhythm from now on. This is where we have a showdown. Cause I'm too high hat and you're too low down. Crazy rhythm now, here's goodbye. They say that when a high brow meets a low brow, walking along Broadway. So my high brow, he got no brow. Ain't it a shame and you're to blame? What's the use of prohibition? You produce the same condition. Crazy rhythm, I've gone crazy too.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm joined today by Elizabeth Bougerol, calling us from Massachusetts, an undisclosed location somewhere in Massachusetts. Great to have you on board. Elizabeth, one of the things that I've come up on a couple times in reading about the group is when they speak of you, they use the term, this kind of one of the boys thing, which I think is very interesting. And I just wanted to ask you to talk about that a little bit, and you know, the concept of being the only female in a band full of a bunch of guys, you know, in any setting, regardless of the genre.
Right.
You know, I think that's a always an interesting dynamic, and not completely unheard of, but it's still, I still think it's a very interesting one, and to hear from, you know, from the female's perspective.
That's a very interesting question. I have to give you bonus points. No one has ever asked me this question before.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's it is interesting. I think that one of the reasons that it's interesting is because, you know, I've done a lot of reading about the experiences of women who fronted bands at the time when this jazz was being invented, was being created. And, you know, most of the women who were leading bands then were sometimes not in charge of the band, which is not the case with me.
Right. I thought about that.
But sometimes they were in charge of the band, but they weren't given credit for it. Like, one of my other favorite stories is that, I don't know if you know this one, so Ella Fitzgerald was singing with Chick Webb's band when he passed away. And she was, I think, 22 or 23 years old when this occurred. And she took over and ran the band for a few years. Now, to do that as a woman, as a black woman at the time, which would have been in the 30s, is
off the charts.
It just boggles yeah. the imagination. I think by and large, the position that a lot of female singers found themselves in or were cast in as jazz was being created was as the, and there was even a word for this that's a little pejorative, the canary. You know, there's a canary at the front of the stage, and, you know, she's wearing a nice dress, and she's, you know, she's eye candy, and she also, you know, she sings real good, boo, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, there's definitely a part of this music that I find interesting from a feminist perspective, because so much of this music was created by women who were kind of negotiating their place in a man's world. Jazz has always been very male, but, you know, these songs, the ones that really have endure because of the emotion and the vulnerability in the people who play. And vulnerability is such a big piece of music. And it's been so traditionally seen as a sort of a female, or at least at the time, I think, was seen more as a sort of a female attribute. You wrap all that up with a bow, and what does that mean for being the front woman and leader of a band in 2020 as a woman singing songs from 1920? I think it's really up to listeners to decide what they come away with in terms of this stuff. I think these songs are so multifaceted. There are a lot of women singing jazz nowadays who are hauling those songs into a new century for gender. One of the things that I try to do a lot in the show is, in our music, one is choose songs whose originators, either the composers or the singers, there were not a lot of female, there were not a lot of women writing songs who got credit for it, unfortunately, from that time, but usually it was the interpreters. When we do a song by one of these women who sort of originated jazz, I talk about them on stage. I talk a lot about them. In particular, for instance, on Welcome Home, Bon Voyage, our latest record, we have a song that was Sophie Tucker's theme song. And Sophie Tucker was one of the sort of original vaudevillian women, and she has a fascinating history because she was told she was too fat and too ugly to be on stage when she was trying to make it in vaudeville. And the only reason she did get her first job is because she finally, very much grinning and bearing it and gritting her teeth, agreed to take a role in blackface. And that was what she had to do to be, in the mind of the producer who put her on stage, palatable to audiences. And, you know, that's just one example of the stuff that, that women had to endure at the time. But she went on to rule vaudeville, and her power on stage came from her being sort of bawdy and larger than life in every way and having opinions that were not opinions you really heard from women's mouths at the time. So, you know, I like to balance the, in our music, in our shows, I like to balance a song from 1910 with some of those stories that maybe people haven't heard about this music before.
And if you leave me, well, you know you'll grieve. You're gonna miss your girl. You're gonna miss your sweet girl. Some of these.
We'll be back with more Musicians Spotlight and our visit with the Hot Sardines. Welcome back to Musicians Spotlight and our visit with the Hot Sardines.
And if you leave me, well, you know you'll grieve. You're gonna miss your girl. You're gonna miss your sweet girl. Some of these.
You always hear.
You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Elizabeth Bougerol of the Hot Sardines. Elizabeth, you know, again, quoting, I believe it's from your website bio, everything in our DNA is about connecting with the audience. That's where we feel most at home. And I couldn't help but read that and think, wow, I mean, all musicians are feeling the pull of the COVID pandemic, and particularly bands that are, well, I mean, most musicians now, I mean, that's where musicians are making money, is through live performances. But yeah, a band of your nature, it's got to be even more of a total change of reality in how you can do your art and how you can get it out and how you can get that response and that connection with an audience. Maybe talk a little bit about, yeah, about that very thing.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, the thing that is tripping us up at the time is that no one has invented a technology that allows musicians to play together in real time. If you get together with 8 of your friends on Zoom and you try to sing Happy Birthday, you will realize quickly that there's something called latency, and it means that, you know, obviously the channels of communication don't sync up. So it's true for an 8-piece band like us, it's been largely a hiatus. Evan and I have gotten together and done some sort of, because we do these ongoing creative sessions when we're well determined to keep going with them, but it's tricky. It is tricky to do that. It's tricky to make recordings. We're in the process of working on some recordings now where musicians are layering their parts over, you know, each musician layers their part over another musician's recording. But it really isn't the same as being in a room and, you know, seeing everyone, looking at everyone else and wondering where the song is going to go and, you know, smelling the flop sweat of panic when someone decides to go off on a different tear, all that stuff. I mean, that's really one of the fun parts of this music is the liveness of it. At the same time, to be an optimist, my optimist side, though, has been thrilled to see the enormous way in which in which COVID has contributed to how fans contribute directly to musicians.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. It's a good point.
Yeah. And that's been exciting because we've seen the beginnings of it for a long time, but this really forced things into a new place. And I want to believe that this shows musicians how they can make music without necessarily being supported by older structures like record labels, and also, you know, shows fans that they if they really contribute directly to the artists they love, they're not only getting more music that they love, they're also have the feeling of being able to genuinely support an artist's path.
Your lights are on, but you're not home, and your mind is not your own. Your heart sweats, body shakes, another kiss is what it takes. You can't sleep, you can't eat, there's no doubt you're in deep. Your throat is tight and you can't breathe, another kiss is all you need. Oh, you like to think that you're immune to this stuff, oh yeah. Closer to the truth to say you can't get enough, you're gonna have to face it, you're addicted to love, addicted to love. You see the signs, but you can't read. You're running at a different speed. Your heart beats in double time. Another kiss and you'll be mine. Your lights are on, but you're not home. And your will is not your own. Your heart sweats, your teeth grind. Another kiss and you'll be mine. Oh, you like to think that you're immune to this stuff, oh yeah. It's closer to the truth to say you can't get enough. You're gonna have to face it. That you're addicted to love.
Elizabeth, we talked a little bit before the interview about trying to touch on this subject being what's going on in America and what's going on all over the world in terms of the response to the murder of George Floyd and the resulting protests and movements all over the world to try to defeat systemic racism. It's so present in the headlines right now in early June 2020. Hopefully it's not something that goes behind the headlines. Undoubtedly other things are going to come along, and COVID related, I'm sure, as well. But hopefully, you know, this is something that is going to be, this is going to get some momentum going to it. I just feel like at this point it seems like the right thing to do in these interviews to ask my guests to kind of explore this a little bit with me, particularly with the kind of music that, that your band does. So in having spoken to you here for a while and touching on some of, you know, these issues beyond just the band and the history of the group and so forth, I wanted to, you know, just kind of bring the subject up for you and I to touch on a little bit and maybe get some of your thoughts.
Absolutely. Jazz is one of the reasons I moved to the United States. I grew up in France, and jazz is so revered there. It still is popular music there, the way it started out here in the U.S. And it is, to my mind, the greatest American export. And it is unquestionably, black music. I mean, there simply would not be, my band would not exist without all the hard work, dedication, talent of all of the Black pioneers who created this music. There is no question. And, you know, being from another country, it's also so clear to me that almost all of the music that's popular today, whether it's, you know, what's known now in 2020 as pop or rock or R&B or, you know, EDM, most genres that are popular today and that America has exported to the rest of the world because this music is amazing, and most of it is, it started out with its roots in the Black community. I know very few musicians who would have a career without this music having its roots, without this music that has its roots in African America. You know, I would not be here. I would not be here without the Black pioneers who created this music that I have the great privilege to get to play. You know, I've had so many conversations with musicians over the last week, and we all feel that way. And what would you be as a human if you didn't double down, triple down on one's anti-racism stance? I mean, I think everyone's reeling.
An interesting quote that I heard, I'm not clear if this is where it originated, but where I heard this from was from actually a basketball player, Jalen Rose, well-known basketball player here in the States. And his quote, I thought was actually very profound. He said, Americans do pretty good with appreciating African-American culture. It's funny, almost a Freudian slip. I said American culture because it's kind of, they're almost synonymous, you know, African American and
totally.
American culture.
Totally.
There's an appreciation of African American culture and a recognition of it. And his comment was, I just wish folks could appreciate African Americans as much as they appreciate African American culture. You know,
that's deep.
And yeah, it is deep.
And it's so,
you know,
true.
Very simple and straightforward. And it's like, yeah, amen.
I mean, that really does sum it up. Thank you for talking about it. I think that's the first piece, is that everyone needs to be talking about it. And and everyone needs to sit with the discomfort. That's part of it. There's no instant gratification here. I've always seen, and not just because I am one, but I've always seen America as a nation of immigrants, and I think that if you don't start there, then you perhaps don't understand what America is about.
yeah, exactly.
And so that's the richness of this place.
Yeah.
To me.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, and I think that you have a great perspective that is a little different than most of the musicians I'm going to be speaking with here or have spoken with. I think Madeleine Proux comes to mind as someone who spent some time in France, but specifically having grown up there and having that perspective of how those jazz musicians, you know, their experience and what they brought to France, from what I understand. I mean, that was so strong that it still was part of what you experienced growing up, you know? So I think that's valuable.
When I was growing up, jazz was still pop music. I mean, like Nina Simone was on the charts, like the pop charts.
Right.
I feel so grateful that I grew up seeing jazz that way. I think in a lot of ways, jazz has been kind of marginalized here in the U.S. As a kind of an out there, genre. And, right. you know, meanwhile, and I'm always tickled when someone comes up after one of our shows and says, I love what you guys do. What do you call it? And I'll say, this is jazz.
Yeah.
This is jazz.
Un, deux, trois. Si les fleurs qui bordent les chemins se fanaient toutes demain, je garderai au cœur celle qui s'allumait dans tes yeux lorsque je t'aimais tant. De nos 16 printemps, petite fleur d'amour, tu fleuriras toujours pour moi. Quand la vie par moments me trahit, tu restes mon bonheur. Petite fleur, sur mes 20 ans, je m'arrête un moment pour respirer ce parfum que j'ai tant aimé. Dans mon cœur, tu fleuriras toujours. Grand jardin d'amour, petite fleur.
This is John Floridis. You're listening to Musicians Spotlight. I'm speaking today with Elizabeth Bougerolle of the Hot Sardines, talking about all kinds of stuff here. Elizabeth, thank you again for taking the time to speak with us. And where
thank
I wanted
you.
To go, well, yeah, you're very welcome. And where I wanted to go next is looking to the future. Now, granted, with the pandemic kind of dominating how things are going to be going for any of us down the road, well, I mean, just make that part of the answer, I guess, because I think we're all having to sit down and think, okay, well, what does the future look like? You know, how can we continue on in the coming months, in the coming years?
Yeah, I don't have an answer. I know that it's going to come down to even if look, we're an eight piece band. We make and sell recordings, but our livelihood primarily is doing live shows and touring to play. I think it's going to come down to people's comfort level at being in a seat, you know, a few inches away from another person in the next seat.
Yeah.
And I think that means there's going to need to be a vaccine. Who's whose worth has been proven. And I just don't think there's any way around that. I wish I could say there was. You know, people are throwing around ideas like, well, you know, if you put, you know, someone in seat AA and the next person is in seat GG, and that, you know, and then you're yeah. going to have 40 people in a room, and that just can't support, that can't support 9 people coming to Hamilton, Montana.
Right, exactly.
Ticket sales wise. So, you know, it's. I think this is an important time. You know, possibly more than ever for people who are patrons of the arts to keep the performing arts entities going while everyone figures this out. But I don't know when that's going to be. I really don't. It's a weird time. You know, again, flip side, I do think one of the things that's interesting is that we're seeing more comfort with streaming, with people paying for virtual tickets to see concerts, and again with fans supporting their artists directly by we have a link to our PayPal as what we call our virtual tip jar on sure. Facebook, and fans have been contributing because they're kind of investing in what they hope will be a longer relationship with an artist, and I think it's cool to see stuff like that. I think this is no one could ever have planned to have this time to test all of these ways of supporting live events virtually.
Little Willie Green from New Orleans, pretty bunty, always had a lot of kids around to keep them company. One day his mom would have a jelly roll, the best cake that was made. Kids began to hang around, well, little Willie said, I ain't gonna give nobody none of my jelly roll. I would give you a piece of my cake to save your soul. Mama said the day before she went away, little boy, I'll bring you a toy. I'm my mama's bride and joy. Ain't no use in you, keep on hanging around. I love you, but I hate to turn you down.
Dessert, see?
That's all it's about. That's why it's a single.
It's about dessert. It's all that's about is just dessert.
HotSardines.com is the name of the band's website, and welcome home, Bon Voyage. Nice title there, by the way, Elizabeth.
Thank you.
cool title there. That is the most recent recording in 2019. And if I'm not mistaken, there's like 8 recordings that the band has done And that those are available as well. Well, thank you so much for making time to speak with us today on Musician Spotlight. And I'm hoping that down the road, we'll be able to sit down face to face and you'll be here on your, here in Montana, maybe your second, maybe your third trip here and in the best case scenario. And maybe we'll get a chance to visit again.
I would love that. I can't wait to come back. I can't wait to go anywhere at this point, as most people would probably say. But we would love to come back to your part of the country. It's just beautiful. And the people, like I said, some of my favorite I've met in the States so far.
Won't you come home, Bill Bay? Won't you come home? I cry the whole night long. I'll do the cooking, Bailey. I'll pay the rent. I know I done you wrong. Remember that rainy evening I threw you out with nothing but a fine tooth comb? No one to blame. Well, ain't that a shame, Bill Bailey? Won't you? You know what? I'm gonna take another one. Won't you come home, Bill Bailey? Won't you come home?
All right.
I cried the whole night long.
Oh, that's
I'll do the cooking, honey. I'll pay all the rent because I know. That rainy evening I threw you out of the house with nothing but a fine tooth comb for your fine hair. I know I'm to blame. Well, well, ain't that a shame, Bill Bailey? Won't you please come home?
This is John Floridis. You've been listening to Musicians Spotlight. Our guest has been The Hot Sardines. If you'd like to contact us, you can do so through the Montana Public Radio website, mtpr.org, as well as through our own website, musicianspotlight.org. You can also find us online on Facebook and on Twitter. Our program is available as a podcast from those websites, as well as through iTunes and Spotify. Special thanks to the Bitterroot Performing Arts Series for this interview. Musicians Spotlight is a production of Montana Public Radio.